Blog Talk Radio.
Number 17, March 12, 2012, and we're marching right along with the Writer's Lounge show. And I am your host, Tom Riedel, and in the background there is Robin Eduardo. We'll be bringing her out in just a second. A brief intro to today's show. We will be introducing and interviewing Robert Nickpon. He is the author of Gazpacho, the little guide I think you're going to fall in love with. So, on to the rest of the information for the show. You can find us over at tomriedel.com/blog. Unfortunately, right now my blog has gone down, and I'm going to work with the web host to try to bring that back to you as soon as possible. But when it is up, you can go there and read the interviews, or not the interviews, but you can read the reviews of the authors that we've had on the Writer's Lounge, and you can also listen to them on the Blog Talk Radio player on each review at the upper left-hand corner of the site. Also, of course, we're on Facebook. So go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and click on the Facebook link, and please like us. Our numbers are climbing. I believe now they're up around 875, and we're shooting for that magic 1,000 mark. So go ahead and help us with that. You can also reach us at twl11@yahoo.com. We've had several authors email us with requests to be on the show, and we'll be bringing them on shortly in the next couple of months. We've already got slots that are filling up, and we really can't wait for that. Next week, we will be interviewing Eric Ekstrom. He wrote The Case of the Forged Fingerprint Killer, and he will be on with us on the show next week on March 26. Also, the week after that would be April 2nd, and the author's name is Naturi Thomas, and she wrote How to Die in Paris. It's a very interesting and very dark comic memoir that she wrote, and she'll be on April 2nd, so you have to join us for that. It was a fantastic read. I really enjoyed it. So with caller instructions today, and I already see that we do have a caller on the line. If you want to hold on, we'll be right to you as soon as possible, and you can call us at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And with that, I would like to bring on, as I always say, Robin, my favorite co-host, Robin Eduardo from New Jersey, way out there on the East Coast. How you doing there, kid?
I'm doing great. That's why I always get a kick out of that when you say that I'm your favorite co-host. Well, you're my favorite host. How about that?
Aw, that's sweet. So what's happening in your world?
Really nothing much has happened since the last show. same old. I am preparing, working on adopting a pair of lovebirds. I know that has nothing to do with writing, but, you know, I'm an animal lover. And
well, it could be, Robin. You could write about it.
I suppose I could.
Zombie-killing
lovebirds.
A zombie lovebird would be really cool, don't you think?
I don't know.
Okay, maybe not. Let's go
maybe
there.
Not. But they're really cute. They're really cute, and I can't wait to get them. And so that's my main goal this week, to get that done.
If very good.
Just make the arrangements for me to go pick them up. That's all I'm waiting on
very
now.
Good. Well, we'll have to listen to your stories and your exploits with the lovebirds in the next show. We have got, during Writer's Topics, and I'm going to kind of steal the show here for a couple of minutes with Writer's Topics and go with the queen of the publishing world. And if nobody knows who that is by now, you're living in some sort of a bubble somewhere, because everybody knows J.K. Rowling, and they certainly know Harry Potter. So I would like to play for you a clip that she had with one and only Oprah Winfrey regarding her writing process and how Harry Potter came to be. And I think you'll find it very interesting, since, of course, we've got an author on today who is starting off with, I believe, a story that's going to grow legs and move fast, and that would be gazpacho. And hopefully Robert here can make $1 billion like she has. But here's a clip from J.K. Rowling, and then we'll be back to meet up with Robert Nicpon and our little friend gazpacho. Be right back.
It is the land of bagpipes, whiskey, kilts, and castles. Scotland is also home to the queen of the publishing world, billionaire mom, J.K. Rowling. I traveled to Edinburgh to meet J.K. in the city where her beloved boy wizard Harry Potter leapt from her fantastical imagination into the hearts of millions. Here, among the cobblestone streets and quaint cafes, J.K., then a struggling single mother, wrote The Sorcerer's Stone longhand while her young daughter slept by her side.
But isn't it interesting that in the first book, when Harry is being dropped off at his uncle's, It is predicted.
One day every child in the world will know his name.
One day every child in the world will know his name.
Well, the screenwriter...
So didn't you know?
No.
Was there part of you subconsciously that you...
Yes. I remember once, and I'm going to call it a flash of clairvoyance now. Obviously, if it hadn't come true, I would just be a random crazy thought I had. But I do remember one day writing Philosopher's Stone. I was walking away from the cafe where I'd been working.
Philosopher's Stone, which became
Sorcerer's Stone, exactly. So that's the first novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this moment where I suddenly thought, it was like another voice speaking to me, and the voice said, the difficult thing is going to be to get published. If it's published, it will be huge.
Wow.
And that is exactly what it was.
So there was some hint that the voice had said to you...
Well, the thing is, you've got to believe, haven't you?
Yes.
You know, I was not the world's most secure person. I wasn't someone with an enormous amount... In fact, I'd say I was someone with not much self-belief at all. And yet, in this one thing in my life, I believed. That was the one thing in my life. I thought, I can tell a story.
Is it true that it just... And, you know, I've heard... The legend is that the story just entered your head while on a train.
Yeah, that's true.
That is true.
I had been writing all I ever wanted to do from the age at which you understand that books are written. They don't spontaneously grow up out of the ground.
Which for you was about six?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
5 or 6. That's all I ever wanted to be.
Was a writer?
Yeah, I wrote compulsively all through my late teens, into my 20s. But I'd never really found the right thing, you know. And then I was on a train, I was 25. And it came, and what came was, boy doesn't know he's a wizard, goes to wizarding school. Bang, bang, bang. And then that was it, and that was like touch paper. And I was on this delayed train going from Manchester to London, and my head was just flooding with what's at this wizard school. There were 4 houses, there were ghosts, there were house ghosts. What do they teach? What subjects do they learn? Who are the teachers? And I had no pen. But that was it. That was it. I don't think I had ever... felt so excited. I thought I'd love to write that. I'd never thought about writing for children. I'd never thought about aiming anything at that age group. And yet it was the thing that I was meant to write, you know, because I'd always been fascinated by folklore. I love a kooky word.
I know.
Kooky word. I do.
I think the greatest gift the Harry Potter series has given to the world is the freedom to use our imagination.
I really hope so. I'm very, very frustrated by fear of imagination. I don't think that's healthy.
What about all the criticism that you received from a lot of religious people who felt that it was too dark and frightening and wizardry and sorcerers and magic and all the like?
Well, I think...
I love what you said. I read this someplace where you said you were not trying to convert people to Christianity when you wrote the book.
No.
No.
I'm not pushing any belief system here, although there is a lot of Christian imagery in the books. That's undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly in Hallows, there's a very clear...
Correct.
But that's not... that's an allusion to a belief system in which I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer the question about how that felt, how did that feel?
To be criticized.
To be criticized in that way. Well, I tried to tease out, okay, what are they being critical of here? Well, if we're talking about the dark and scary stuff, I think it's perfectly legitimate for a parent to say, that's a little old for my child, or we're going to need to discuss that together. We'll read that together. That's great. In fact, that's perfect. Sit down and read that together. That would be amazing. On the you must not discuss witchcraft, you must not have witches or magic depicted in the book, I find that nonsensical. In 100, 200, 300 years from now, there'll be a new children's story that has witches and wizards and magic. It will always be with us because it's a belief system that humanity passed through and still has huge attraction. There's a quotation that I almost used in the Harry Potter book. I'm paraphrasing, this won't be exact. In magic, man has to rely on himself. So in religion, of course, you're looking for outside support. But that's the appeal of magic. I'm not saying I believe magic is real. I don't. But that's the perennial appeal of magic, the idea that we ourselves have power and we can shape our world.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes think it's very analogous to having a lot of money. That people think, because that's kind of like a superpower. I've often thought this since all this happened to me. People think, well, you can solve anything now. You think, really? It doesn't work like that.
Coming up, you're known as the first billionaire author.
Yeah.
Okay, that was J.K. Rowling, and I was very interested when she talked about you've got to believe that you can tell a story, and that's important to all of us writers, to be able to sit down and pick up a pen or go to your computer and sit down at the keyboard and crank out a story. You have to believe. And I found it interesting, too, once again, as she was talking there, on a train at 25 years old from Manchester to London with no pen, she created Harry in her imagination. And that's something that Robert and I were just talking about as we were listening to that clip. And we'll talk to you a little bit about him in just a second. But let's get on to the main event, and that would be to introduce Gazpacho, Book 1, The Early Years. It was written by Robert Nick Pond and Carol Murto, and is published by Amazon.com Kindle Services. It's available for purchase on Amazon.com Kindle, and you can visit the author at 7PillarStudio.com. That's www.7PillarStudio.com. The little guy that you see on the Blog Talk Radio site viewer and on the book cover on our book review page is as real and true to life as anyone who has had a dream and chased it to fulfillment. Gazpacho was born and raised in a forest glen next to a farmstead. Within the roots of an oak tree, Gazpacho is brought into this world, and in this, his home, he learns about the power of love, the gift of creativity, and the value of support, which is given to him by family and friends. After his father mysteriously disappears, his mom nurtures him as best as she can through all of the challenges of a young worm's life. And during this time, Gazpacho learns from his mom that he is a rarus nimbus, and it is a very special and rare species of worm that is capable of communicating and most other animal species, but being a rarest nimbus also has one rather obnoxious and quite offensive drawback. They are equipped with toxic glands, which produce a very nasty and unpleasant stink. When this socially crippling condition causes Gazpacho much distress, and he is bullied relentlessly by his bug peers. However, the seemingly insurmountable struggles that Gazpacho faces in his early life doesn't deter him from reaching for his dreams of being a world-renowned professional singer. He readies himself as he sets off on his journey to become famous and to also bring long-overdue notoriety to the much-maligned bug world. Gazpacho Book 1, The Early Years, was written for an audience of young teens in mind, but this extremely adorable and cute story about a struggling young worm's life has a morality built into it that should appeal to any age bracket from 13 to 103. The characters are very well developed, and the author does a superb job of entrancing the reader into loving each and every one of them, even though most of them are bugs. I see that as quite an accomplishment. The plot of the story is one that will hold your attention throughout, as there are plenty of conflicts and situations that work well and flow very nicely. Gazpacho will undoubtedly worm his way into your affections. Robert Nippon, a good friend of Gazpacho, helped Gazpacho to write this book, and Mr. Nippon should also be recognized in his own right as someone who chased his own dreams as an exceptionally accomplished artist. Robin and I are very happy to welcome Robert to the Writer's Lounge. And with that, Robert, you're here in studio, so I don't have to click any buttons to bring you on the phone. How are you doing today?
I'm here. All in one piece, Tom. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Tom and Robin.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, Robin, once again, is out there in New Jersey, and she's looking forward to the interview here, Robert. And I was wondering if you could read an excerpt of one of your Gazpacho stories here in book number one.
Of course. I do have an excerpt here. It's from the book, chapter six, which is titled A Tale of Two Weasels. All seemed quite well, and more than fine enough as the two of us caught our breaths for a moment. But then I got this really bad feeling, and it went all the way from the top of my head down to the tips of my toes. It was that sickly, stinky feeling of my glands kicking into gear, and Baca quickly stood right up as if he sensed something too. Whatever it was sure wasn't good by any stretch of the imagination. Before I could even ask him what he thought the trouble was, he quickly shushed me to silence, and we both did our best to try and see if we could spot anything or anything around us in the dark. After a few minutes of looking all around in vain, Baca gave me the signal to follow him, and we immediately bolted from the spot and got going. Baca had a very focused and serious expression on his face as he moved and bounded through the forest like a jungle cat. From one side of the path to the other, and then back again, he looked around for any sign of trouble, all the while heading us straight for home. I followed right behind him, and I pretended that I was a jungle cat too, and I really must say that it sure was fun playing along with him. At first, I imagined that I was a cheetah, just that I'd be able to keep up with him. But once I found out that I could actually keep pace, I imagined myself to be something more like a leopard, and it was really great fun to dart around so slinky fast and cool through all of the brush on the forest floor. For a moment, I was really beginning to feel the big cat persona within me come to the fore, but then I ran right into the backside of Baca, and I wiped out onto the ground next to him. Sad to say, I never had time to react fast enough to miss him, and I immediately felt like my old worm self once again. For some reason, he had stopped dead right there in his tracks, and when I saw the reason why, I wished that I had remained feeling like a great big and powerful jungle cat for just a while longer. Why, right then, I would have even settled for feeling something like a rather large domestic variety of house cat, because just there, from out of the dark up ahead of us, crept forward this mean, hungry-looking, giant, humongous rat creature thing, and its glowing red beady eyes were locked directly onto the two of us. The creature was snarling and drooling all over the place, and, slowly but surely, it neared ever closer and closer to us. So, just where do you think you're going to run off to out here, huh? Don't you realize where you are? Well, let me tell you. You're exactly where it looks like you're going to get eaten, and there's nothing you can do about it. Isn't that right, Slim? Just then, another big furry rat creature popped its head out from under a bush right behind us, and it said, "Yeah, that's sure giving them the what for, but all I want to know again is which one of them is supposed to be for me. I forget. Is it my turn to pick, or are we just going to share, like we did the last time? Because, well, I'm awfully partial to the looks of the nice, plump, and juicy-looking one over there on the end." Boy, that rat who popped out from behind us and said all that sure could have used a napkin himself, because he was drooling like crazy all over the place, too. He certainly did have bad manners, just like the first creature, but, unfortunately for him, he really didn't seem to have that much going for himself in the smarts department either. The first drooler even shook his head in disgust at what his friend had said, and then he scolded him as he yelled, "What are you talking about, you fool, the nice and plump one? They're both nice and plump looking, you goofball. And what do you mean, the one on the end? There's only the two of them. Right or left is all you gotta say. Or the one closest to you, or the furthest away. What's the matter with you? Look at them, will you? It's only a question of whether you want the light, tender one or the dark one with the crispy crust. So what's it going to be, tender and juicy or extra crispy?"
Very good. Very good, Robert. That was fantastic, and I couldn't help but chuckle as you read. And we also have somebody in studio here who also was laughing as he's listening to the show in the background here. Kind of the peanut gallery here. You've developed an audience, and I think everybody else out there who's listening is also sitting there and chuckling, and they're amused by what you just read. And I see that we have a caller, and if Robin doesn't mind, I'd like to bring the caller on the line with a question or comment. Would it be okay with you, Robin?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay, let's bring the caller on from area code 651-659. We don't know your name, so we're going to have to go with your number. Hello, caller. You're on the Writer's Lounge with Tom Riddell, Robin Eduardo, and Robert Nickpon. What's your question or comment? Hello? Okay, well, it looks like that person left. I would encourage you to give us a call back, area code 651-659, and get you on the program. I'm sorry you had to wait about 21 minutes here, but we had to get through the beginning of the program. So with that, Robert, can you tell us why you and Carol, of course, Carol is also an instrumental part of this book.
Absolutely.
She helped you write it. Can you tell us why you and Carol helped Gaspacho bring this story to us?
I just love the way that you put that, because that was very much my experience of it. Gaspacho came to me. I envisioned him while I was working one summer in my studio. And you mentioned that I'm an artist, and I was painting away there in my studio this one summer about 10 years ago, and was just working on this portrait. And my mind began to not wander, but I actually just began to invest it. I was thinking at that time, one major, major question, that if I could produce anything or do anything, what would that be artistically? And for what reason? Now, I don't question it, but in that moment, I envisioned Gaspacho. And originally, all that I saw was, generally what he looked like. And then maybe a little bit more so how he might have talked and what have you. But I really just saw an image of him. The character immediately delighted me, and I really loved spending time just even considering the character after that point in time. But what occurred and what did happen over a period of time was that as I began to consider the character and spend time with him, I began to see almost in the form of, you could say it like skits, these little episodes of his life experiences unfold before me. And so I began to imagine, spend time with these, and they absolutely delighted me, always made me laugh. The humor side and aspect of it was always there, like, you know, how I read in the book part there. That was always a component, but it was him, his character, his nature. That was really, really impressive to me and left a profound and had a profound impact on me. So I began to take it more seriously, what I was not only receiving but imagining and envisioning. It was Carol, though, who, as incredibly insightful as she is even more so gifted and intuitive. She informed me that she felt what I should do with the material I was receiving, with what I had, to originally put it into a book. So she was really the main person for me that got me even thinking about it being produced, or to actually even producing a book, which is what occurred. So I began to really consider that. And once I began to process that, I saw it for how valid it was. It came to me then a little bit later after that, just how appropriate. And I began to write the book never looked back since then.
Very good. I know that there's always a good woman behind a good man.
She's
been there for you. And with that, Robert, we do have a caller. Hopefully it's the same one that left us. Let's go to the caller. 651-659, you are on the Writer's Lounge. Robin Eduardo, Tom Riddell, and Robert Nickpon. You have a question or comment? And for some reason, we lost them again.
Oh.
And I don't know why that's happening, but... Robin, what did you think about what Robert was having to say there?
Well, you know, I was listening to what he was saying about how the character developed in his head and then how he kind of gathered these little vignettes together to form a story, and then Carol helping to guide it toward actually considering publishing it. And as he was speaking, I'm looking at these cute little, they're so delightful. I love these little drawings, Gazpacho and I don't know the other guy's name, the little...
Well, I think the
drawing... beetle, whatever, what was it again?
The drawing that's up on the Blog Talk Radio site, which everybody can see over at the Blog Talk Radio site.
Yeah.
I believe most of you are out there watching it now. We'll see a picture of Gazpacho and his friend Baca. Is that correct, Robert?
That's it.
And there's two. What are they again? What type of animals are they that with the really sharp teeth and
weasels?
Weasels. Okay.
Weasels.
Well, exactly. And that's why I mentioned the title, "Tale of Two Weasels." They encounter the characters Gazpacho and Baca encounter the weasels in that chapter 6, the part that I read.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Is that pencil?
It began with colored pencil, actually, just
right,
in order
right.
to document these in a style that was really conducive and really coordinated well with the story and the way that the story was told. Kind of a really appropriate medium, I think, that fit well with the storyline,
how
the story is unfolded or written, actually. So began with colored pencil. And then retouched everything in Photoshop in order to get
right.
the fine detail into it.
Yeah, you did a fine job there. And Robin and everybody else out there, I need you to pay attention to this, because if you're looking at those illustrations up on the Blog Talk Radio site, you have not seen anything. This man is, well, I keep saying, he's the Norman Rockwell that is sitting next to me in my studio right now. And I really mean that, because... if you would take some time out there, everybody, while you're listening to the show, and go to www.7pillarsstudio.com, that would be 7, the number 7, followed by PILLARSSTUDIO.com, you will see for yourself what I'm talking about. Robert is a sculptor. He's a painter. He's a drawer. He's incredible. And when he approached me at work, and this is where I met Robert, he asked me if it was true that I was a writer and that I did a Blog Talk Radio show. And I says, yes. And he says, well, I wrote a book. And I said, okay. You know, everybody writes a book. And, of course, I've gotten a lot of that over the last several months, and they want to be on the show. So I said to Robert, okay, let me see the book. And, of course, he gave me the book. I read the book. And I fell in love with Gazpacho. And then he says, If you want to know more about me, you can go to my website. And when I went to his website when I was at work, I almost couldn't do my job because my jaw was absolutely on the ground.
Oh, yeah. These drawings are absolutely gorgeous.
I couldn't believe what he's done. So we'll touch on that in a little bit. But let's see here. The actual process of writing, where do you go to write? And is it with a keyboard or paper? I know you mentioned that earlier, and I've seen you walk around the workplace
with a notebook. Yes.
With a notebook. Is that how you write?
Yes. Originally, I will go to a notebook, just use a pen and paper, and just jot down things. It's just so much more conducive to it's so much more immediate for me.
Do you do that standing up, or do you sit down?
Sitting down. I will do that when I have the opportunity to have it's a contemplative time. It's a time where it's quiet, it's peaceful. It's a time where I can really focus on the subject at hand, and actually not just for the book, but any work of art that I produce. I need to take that time and give myself that time. It's a part of the entire process. Not just alone time, I should say, but that quiet time. And what happens during that time is, well, time just seems to evaporate. It's like, you know, an hour goes by like a couple of minutes, you know, it's that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So what I do find is if I do give myself that time, a great deal of information I can record during a sitting or a session, even if it's just for an hour. A lot gets processed, a lot can come out during that time. And so over the course of actually it was some years then where I give myself time here and there because I was still producing art. I didn't just drop my art in order to produce the book. I was working on my art throughout the time, paintings and sculptures and what have you, while all of this information was coming to me about gazpacho and the storyline was being put together. So once again, Carol suggested, yeah, Rob, go for it. Write a book. I'll do it that way. And I really saw that was the best avenue, the best way to document this information or to share it with the world. That process just expanded and expanded to the point where I found that it required more time than I thought it initially would.
Right.
It really took over and became not just a story, but I think of it more as a really quite an epic work, and a large work.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major work for me. And of all the work that I've produced to date, without question, I've spent more time on this particular work than any other work
right.
I've produced.
Once again, you've written four books of this series,
That's
and
correct.
We're just seeing number one out. But I was wondering if you could expand a little bit about, you just mentioned your art, about your history in art and how it inspires and shapes your life. A little bit deeper into the art part of it and the history of that.
Well, probably the main thing that comes to mind when you just asked me about that is it was just my last year of high school, and I was discerning at that point in time what it was that I was going to do with my life, where my future would take me. And I still recall where I was, basically. I was driving. I was in commute, we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And that came up in J.K. Rowling's interview. During this commute, I was commuting myself. I was driving, and I put it to myself. I said, what is it that you feel, Robert, you can do for the rest of your life? And it really boils down to this. It was finding something that I could absolutely believe in. That was major for me. It wasn't just, you know, I can work. I can work like everyone can work. And I go to work every day now, and I work. But that was not the main thing to me. It was finding that something that I could invest all of myself in, that I could believe in to that degree. And I had artistic talent, and that was coming out during those years, high school years. I was really producing things that everyone took notice of, and I was being pointed in that direction. And so when I considered the life of an artist and producing art as a living, I just knew it. It was an absolute fit. I could believe in it to the degree that I could invest all of myself into the work. And I love that about the process. It means everything
to me.
That's
what J.K. Rowling was saying, is you have to believe in what you're doing. And
yes.
So you took it to
yes.
the next
and
step
so,
and went
so,
and studied
and
art.
So it's a full investment. It's not just when you're producing a work of art, it isn't just half of you, you know, that gets in there. It's not just a part of you. You're fully invested and entirely invested. And even if you're still in process while the work is going on, you know, as you're producing it, you're going to be with it and remain with it until it is done appropriately.
Right, perfectly.
Perfect is not really the term, but it's appropriate.
Exactly.
You do it the way that it needs to be done. You love the work, and you love it, in this sense, by giving it what it needs and what it requires.
I say perfectly because I am a perfectionist like a lot of us out there, and I think sometimes we see that as a negative, and it isn't always a negative.
Yeah.
It's how you frame that idea in your mind as far as what you're doing.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be good, and it has to be a reflection of your abilities and your person, because you're selling not only your artwork, but you're also selling yourself.
You're pointing to something, Tom, that I think is really a profound thing, a profound issue, a very important issue. And Michelangelo clarified this in a quote that Vasari recorded. Michelangelo stated, perfection is no trifle, but trifles make perfection. And what really anyone that is a perfectionist, you know, the relative sense of this, a clearer perception of it is, it's not perfection that you're after, it's attention to detail,
mm-hmm.
detail oriented. That's really what it's more about. People can think, you know, if you are so highly focused on details, then you're a perfectionist. This is how people notice it and how they see it. But perfection isn't attainable. It's unrealistic. It's even ridiculous. It's not something that, again, I would pursue. But this attention to detail now, that is very important.
Right, exactly.
And that's an absolute thing for any work, but especially like in the case of the work that I attempt to produce, works of art. When it comes to producing a work of art, attention to detail is absolutely necessary.
Right. Exactly.
If you are going to produce a work of any lasting value and with any that could ever be held in any real esteem or high regard.
And I heard you talk about, I heard you talk about the bringing out the essence of your work, not just a picture of a man or a drawing of a man, but the essence of the person that you're actually drawing is captured in a lot of your work. And once again, if you go to Robert's website, you will find that. And with that, once again, we're going to try one more time here, 651-659. We're going to try to bring you on with a question or comment for Robert Nikpon and, of course, your host, Tom Riddell and Robert Enduerto. And there you are. You got a question or comment for Robert? Hello? Okay, I guess that person is having a problem with their phone. And
I don't know what.
Three strikes and you're out. So if you're out there listening, follow Robert. We'd appreciate emails for Robert. And once again, we are promoting his book extensively here because it is such a great book. It's a great read, not just for children, but also for adults. Robin, do you have any questions?
I wanted to touch on also, I mean, I definitely agree with the whole thing that, you know, it's not so much that you're in pursuit of perfection, but, you're really breathing life into art.
That's what it is for me.
That's how I look at it. I'm not a professional artist, but I am an artist, and I work in a lot of different media. But what I was thinking, what really struck me is how you were explaining how you the attention to detail and all that, and that is very important because you're not trying to make everything perfect, and people might look at it from maybe a different point of view that you're being perfectionistic, and that's not, that really, that's not it. It really is about trying to do the very best that you can for the work, because it is like your child. It is your baby. You're trying to make it grow and develop it into, you know, everything that you'd love it to be. You know, I mean, you have to lead it somewhere, and that's how you do it, by expressing that creativity and focusing on that. And I just, wow. I mean, again, I'm looking at the drawings, and I really love, I mean, even though it's done in colored pencil, it's funny because the eyes, little things like that, it looks like you could see the sheen of the moisture of the, you know what I'm saying, that gleam in the eye.
Well, he knows exactly what you're saying, Robin.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know he knows, but I'm speaking generally to everybody out there. If you're looking at the drawings, that it just, the shading underneath the leaves, and I mean, there's just so much. I was just really going into, like, I wanted to peek underneath the edge of the leaves and say, hey, what's underneath there? You know, these are little insects. Maybe there's more little guys hiding under there. I don't know.
Yeah, well, Robin,
I was really getting into it.
I totally appreciate what you're saying on this detail note. For me, what the illustrations are, what's really poignant about the illustrations is how they're done, because they're most appropriate. And that's the attention to detail for me. If I was to pick up a brush and do my absolute best work possible, they would exceed even what these illustrations are. That was not what was necessary. What was necessary was that I do it freely and do it more in the context of the way that Gazpacho himself had envisioned or experienced those incidents, those life experiences, because that's what they're recording. It's not if Gazpacho himself, as this character, created the illustrations, but it's more within and fitting in the context of how he might have, at the level that he perceived them to be. So rather than get all, bring out my best paintbrush and go for it that way, it was to do it in a more simplified way, in a way that, again, really depicted more the nature of him as a character. Now, that's a detail that if I missed, when you looked at the illustrations, they wouldn't fit into the context of the story as they presently do. And that's a part of the detail orientation. It isn't just about the literal details that you see and can touch. It's about these other more refined details. And that's a part of this process that any artist is about or goes through in creating a work of art. It's taking the time, giving yourself the time to process out these factors so that you can produce not just the best quality work, as you were stating it, but in loving the work, giving it appropriately what it needs so that it can live, so that it can be a life-giving thing in and of itself.
As Robin said, breathing life into the character.
Yes, absolutely, so well said.
As an author, as a writer, I think we all take time to create our characters and breathe that life into the characters, whether it's a memoir from people that are living and that are existing, or a fictional character that we've developed, as you did, in the back of our mind while we're riding to work, or J.K. Rowling's writing on a train, which I find fascinating that billionaire writer came up with that idea on a train and brought it to what it is today. It's an icon. It's incredible.
Absolutely.
And I think it's important to keep that imagination alive. And what I was wondering in writing Gazpacho, what was it like working with Carol? How did she contribute to this story? What did she do exactly with the story?
Carol's contribution to this work is absolute. And Carol's a blessing in my life. And first and foremost, the most important thing that Carol did for me was give me the opportunity to do my best on this work. She loved me through the process of it so that I could document it, what I was receiving, as I was receiving it. And she did not ask of me anything more than to, she always does, just for my best. She she promotes that, I'm so blessed in that way to have somebody in my life, just as it is, who would give me that space, that freedom to do this work, and over the years that it required me to do it, the way that I knew was most appropriate. And then once it was documented, she reviewed the work and then contributed to it as well as an author. And really importantly, got me to focus on what was the most difficult part of this as a first-time author, really, here for me. What was the most difficult part of the process for me? And that was the language, the use of language. Let's face it. Think about this. How does a worm sound? And if a worm's going to say something, what is it going to sound like? That was just so hard for me.
You were talking to me about that, how you actually had to develop
the character.
The characters, not just the character itself, but also
the voice
of the worm.
That's correct.
And how would
how
he
interact?
Would use
that? Yeah.
And how he would use that.
And, absolutely.
And you know what, Robin, I don't know about you, but I don't know if I've ever... I know Robert has really delved into this character, and I don't think any of us... Well, I mean, some of us have, but to actually go to that extent, to know your character, I know it was a process of like giving birth.
You know, yes, Tom. And in the character Gazpacho, what I learned is Gazpacho is, without any question, a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to terms with what that part is, I realized real early on, and that's what was precious about it, Gazpacho is a part of me, and it is the best part of me. That is the gift of it. That is the meaning of it. That's why I could invest as much as I did in it over all this time and all these years. It takes a great deal of perseverance just to see something like this through what is a major work.
Yeah.
And it requires you to be able to love the process and to love the work enough, even for as inspired as you might be with it, to give yourself as an author, as an artist, the time to do it appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Carol's just the greatest supporter in that way. She totally gets that she's so gifted in herself.
Yes, it's great. Robin?
Wow. No, I was, I, matter of fact, her picture on the Writer's Lounge blog talk radio site. Yeah, there's a picture popped up of her, and she's really a sweet, beautiful woman.
Wow.
I mean, but you could see the sweetness, the soul.
The soul. And, boy, you got
it. You really can. It, she projects that from within. It's just radiating out of her in her image. And it's cute because she just has that little smile and everything. And and now I can kind of see Gazpacho in you, too. So it's just,
right.
I don't know. I just think it's really, really cute. It's a sweet story. And I really think the drawings that you did to accompany the story will actually, well, which came first, the pictures the pictures came first. Or actually, the character came first.
Very good. There it is. Exactly.
Right.
The character was established first, and the character drove the story. What made it so difficult was that in writing this book is that the character is speaking for himself. I'm not speaking for the character. So, and it's told as best as I could tell it through his own words. So if it was going to be that, and that being the most appropriate way to do this, I defined those words, his language, the way he would say it, not the way I would say it, or even interpret it. It just needed to be as believably him as possible. And that took a very long time to develop and get it to the point where it is now, which is resolved. It's just...
Oh, I have I'm sorry. I do have a question. Does Gazpacho have an accent? Because now I'm all into it now.
We won't know about that until the movie comes out and we're looking.
Right. I know.
I don't know.
I'm just picturing him with a little. I don't know. I'm just really going deep with this.
Part, I think Robin Williams.
Funny.
Robin Williams.
Hold on to that, Robin, because there is something to what you say that will reveal itself down the road.
Yes.
Oh, goodness. All right. Yes. Then I look forward to that.
Robert, we did touch upon the course. It is now available on the Amazon Kindle if you want to run out there and get it. But there is something that Robert would like to explain regarding that process. There is a little bit of a glitch that he wants to correct before everybody runs out and buys it. If you could just kind of hold on to your money a little bit here. I know you want to spend it, and Gazpacho is waiting for you. I mean, he's just waiting to jump into your arms, and the little guy has captured my heart. But if Robert, you could explain a little bit about the process you're going through and maybe just touch upon a little bit of the problems that you had while publishing this to Kindle.
Yeah, sure, Tom. Thanks for bringing that up. What did happen was I had coordinated for the book to be released just prior to the show. And then on the show here to promote the book being on the Kindle site and available. That did happen. We got it up. Carol and I did in time this morning. But when I took a look at what we had up, the images did not transfer over as I hoped that they would. So that being a glitch, I looked into it today. And we're on top of that now to resolve that issue.
You have a friend that's going
that's
to help
exactly
you with that.
That's exactly correct.
Right.
And somebody who can help us take care of that issue. So do look for it online. But make sure.
Probably within the next week, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Right,
I would say in the next week. And as soon as possible, we'll get that taken care of, the images uploaded as well, so that the book is 100% there. And you can definitely check my site at the Seven Pillars Studio. I'll list exactly and specifically when the book is ready to be purchased, and illustrations included.
Very good. We got a little bit over 7 minutes here left, Robert. And I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit about what we can expect with Gazpacho in books 2, 3, and 4.
Okay, well, that's...
It's a load, but see if you can condense it down
you know,
in Reader's Digest version.
Okay, well, I'll just explain where this is at. Gazpacho, the first book, the early years, is more than anything else, serves as an introduction to the character. And as I've already stated, as it's already came to light here, Gazpacho, this storyline is character-driven. So for me, the first book was so important that you get to know the character. And if you really enjoy this character, if, like you say, Tom, how you put it, if he worms his way into your affections, this kind of a thing, you're good to go on the rest of the books. And in that way, only be able to, or simply be able to enjoy them more because you are really fond of the character. To me, again, as a character-driven storyline, it needed to start at the beginning. Gazpacho's account of his own life story, that's what this is. And so it does. It begins at the beginning, his first memory, in fact. And so from his first memory, which is featured in the prologue, to his early years, his first memories as an infant, these type of things are documented starting in the first chapter, and they go on to reveal who he really is. You really get to know him in this first book. In the second, third, and fourth book, everything expands to the point where it becomes quite an epic work, and his experiences, his travels, his journeys, his adventures, they only grow and increase. What also takes place of special note is Gazpacho, there are two main things about him as a character, as you mentioned, Tom. One thing is that he his glands aid him in his ability to communicate. He has these stinky, toxic glands. That particular issue for him only increases. And that his glands become even more toxic over time.
Yeah.
because as he's journeying through life...
An Old Spice deodorant is not going to do the trick
for him. Well, right? No, exactly. It's just that he needs to use those glands, those which are really defensive mechanisms for him in order to survive in the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
As he journeys into the world of people, that's his dream to do this, to become a great singing star, an idol sensation. That's what drives him. That's why he leaves his home and journeys into our world.
Hopefully he won't run into a Simon Cowell, who would probably make fun of his odor, I would imagine.
I'm not going to say anything. It's just that he runs into so many obstacles along the way that he needs to use the glands often enough, and that he's using them, the glands just begin to produce more toxins. So that issue, which was always an issue for him, it only increases. And that just really drives the story and the content so much more.
Yeah, I think we're getting ahead of ourselves here when we ask you the next question. Mm-hmm. Like J.K. Rowling, after she created Harry Potter, she's gone on now to write a new book. It's an adult book.
Yes.
It's no longer in that world of fantasy, I am told. And she just talked about it, started writing it. But, okay, what happens after gazpacho? You're a writer. You've got the bit by the bug. Of course, you're an artist foremost.
Right.
What do you write after gazpacho? Any ideas?
There is a particular work that does come to mind that I think would best be documented again by writing it. It's quite epic itself. It's something that I considered many years ago and had been thinking about, and I have begun to document, but gazpacho was so much more present, needed to be done, and in the immediate still needs to be finished first before I begin any other work. Though there is another work on the back burner.
Oh, cool.
And that's
good.
Yes.
Yeah, we're looking forward to reading that. And Robert, we're getting kind of close to the end of the program here. I would like to thank you for being on, and then of course I can ask Robin. Robin, do you have any final thoughts or a question for Robert before he goes on his merry way here?
None other than to wish him a lot of luck with the series, and I do hope that you can resolve those issues with the drawings, the illustrations for the book, and I look forward to downloading them as you release them, and I think they're wonderful. You know, from what I've seen so far, I'm really impressed, and I think you're going to do very well with this series.
I think
he's good luck.
Doing fantastic, and I think that everybody has to promote this, and once again, just go and take a look at gazpacho, and you're going to fall in love with him, folks. I guarantee you that. Robert,
a little cutie patootie.
Wonderful having you on the program, and I would like you to just let everybody know once again where they can find you on the internet.
Robin, thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it again so very much. And yes, you can find me at www.7pillarsstudio.com.
Very good. And with that, Robin, we've come to another end of another fantastic show. Next time on March 26, we will have Eric Ekstrom on, and he has written a book called Case of the Forged Fingerprint Killer. So we're looking forward to that. And with that, Robin, I guess it's time to say goodnight.
Good night.
And as we always say here in the Writer's Lounge, good reading and good writing, and we'll see you next time.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. But it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow. in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can, then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun begins.